The Attack Zone, Episode 9, Picking a Deck. Hello, Dice fans. You have stepped once more into the Attack Zone, bringing you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. Each week, we're bringing you topics that we choose to put forward so that we can share our strengths for one another's improvement and also bring attention to our weaknesses so that we can learn to address them. I'm Dave, and joining me on the line once again is JT, don't call me JT Homash, Homash.
What's up,
How dude? Are you, JT?
I'm good. I'm good.
Good stuff. No lawn mowing today, was there?
No, it rained, so we went golfing.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know. I mean, like, latitude-wise, we are, like, roughly in the same thing, and you're not that far away, only a couple hours. A couple hours to the west. There was lightning like crazy around here. How on earth did you go golfing?
Well, so the scramble was planned for today, and it rained pretty hard this morning, and then it was raining, but no lightning or thunder when we teed off, and then about three or four holes in, the rain let up, and we were able to just play the rest of the round wet, and it was a lot of fun. I spun a golf cart around and nearly killed my brother, and lots of good stuff, man.
So a great golfing story, and that's awesome. It sounds like you had a nice day. I'm glad you didn't kill your brother. I was out at a course with a good friend of mine, and it was like this perfect, idyllic day. It was beautiful, like perfect golfing day. Not a cloud in the sky. It was hot, but not too hot. It was breezy. The grass was just so green. It was just perfect, perfect day. And all of a sudden, this is shattered by a couple, a man and a woman, going the wrong way on the cart path, speeding away in a golf cart. And he is screaming at her, cursing up a storm. Like, everybody just kind of stops and turns their head, you know? And Chris and I both agree, oh, geez, you know, I can't imagine ever yelling at my wife like that. That's crazy, you know? And a little bit later on, we go and we see the source of the yelling. And there was a golf cart half submerged in one of the water hazards. And we said, oh, I guess I might yell a little bit. Like this thing, and it wasn't just that it was submerged. It was that somebody was screwing around with it. Like there was tracks just kind of all around, swerving around, like somebody was trying to do donuts in their golf cart or something. And then just completely lost control and went down a little embankment and into a hazard. So like you had to try real hard.
That's so bad. So bad. They said, so today, like, it was just super wet. And they said, you know, you just drive your ball, no big deal. And I'm like, normally on a day like today, it's either, you know, carts on path or 90-degree rule. And so I was like, I'll save as much wear on the course as I can. And I went to do the 90 degrees, but it was so hilly. And, like, this course is a lot of fun to play, but it's just super, super hilly. And so the cart path is usually like ridiculously above or below the fairway. In this case, it was above, and I turned and started going downhill and immediately just started to slide and turn sideways. And of course, the back part of the rear of the golf cart is much heavier. And so it just spun us around, and then we're just sliding down, the fairway like backwards. Headed towards the drop-off.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. Anyway.
Just bail at that point. Oh, my goodness. Well, okay, so this is not a golf podcast. This is, in fact, a Dice Masters podcast. As Bones might say, we'll stay clean. Darn it, Jim. This is a Dice Masters podcast, not a golf podcast. I do want to remind everybody before we get into today's topic, if you like this show, please give us a review on iTunes, or if there's a different podcatching service that you use to listen to us, give us a review there. We don't advertise outside of like our own network of us in any way, shape, or form. So this is the only way that we have to get the word out there is you guys and gals. So this is going to help others find it. Everything's word of mouth, and we'd love to give you props for a review here. We've had some great reviews the last couple of weeks. Nothing new for this week, but we do want to shout you out, so bring them on. All right. So today we have a I think, a pretty timely topic, given that we have new sets coming soon. We'll have bigger events coming again soon. And, of course, we have the PDC, the Pro Dice Circuit Regionals, coming up here just a little bit later this month. And a big thing that people talk about on the website, they message us, we talk about it amongst ourselves, is what deck should I even bring to this thing? And there is so much to consider with this topic. But before we really dig into the meat of it, I want to say the stuff we're about to talk about doesn't necessarily apply blanket to everybody. Some players are going to take what they want to take regardless. They don't follow the meta. They don't care. They want to play the game to enjoy the game. That's fine. They want something different out of the game than we do. We want to play a little more competitively. That's not that those people don't want to win. They want to do it a different way, or they have a different definition for what a win on the day is. And that's a valid way to approach the game. That's not a better or worse player. That's a different approach. So some things might not apply to everybody, though we assume if you're listening to the Attack Zone that you are approaching it from a little bit more of a Spike player perspective versus a Timmy or Johnny. And that's kind of the disclaimer before we get into this. So JT, so much to think about with deck selection, right?
Absolutely. And especially the way things are right now. Coming off of U.S. nationals and worlds and prior to that, you know, other country nationals, you know, I can only speak for Canada and U.S. nationals. There hasn't been anything released since then, and so, you know, we're not really expecting the meta to change probably too much from what we saw there. And so I think that's the first thing that we need to look at is the meta, its current state, and what do we expect out of it?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think another thing we look at is if you're going to a place, especially if it's a place you've been to before, are there some certain preferences that your opponents might have that you can sort of plan for? For example, if I'm going over to Truby's store, I know that Truby is the Kobold King. If he's playing, I know I can expect something with that. You know, I know that Melissa, she loves to just milk thematic synergy for all that she can, and she's done a heck of a job with that, I think, especially of her Kitty Pride X-Men team. You have Jared, a good guy who plays there. He loves Jinzo Control. So, like, sometimes when you go to a place, it's like, okay, I know that these people have their preferences, but even that's not always foolproof, and you might go to a place you've never been before, and so that doesn't even do you a whole lot of benefit.
Yeah, and so you've got those things. You get the meta. You've got the local meta,
I suppose.
The players that you know that may show up, their tendencies, their preferences, and then you've got your own baggage to carry, right? Your own testing and the things that that you have experienced and what you bring to you know, your game and your preferences and the things that you know well and your weaknesses. And so sometimes there's some problems there with maybe you know, your limited exposure if you are in a location that doesn't have a large local group, or even like a regular local group, or even a local group that, you know, prefers unlimited constructed play for that high level competition. You know, maybe your group just loves to draft, or they just love, you know, crazy restrictions on team building, or you know, maybe those are the things that are in your local meta. So sometimes your own testing may have some limitations, but those are the things that all feeds the pool from which you draw the thoughts and pre-gaming and what to consider before you really dive deep, right?
Yeah, yeah. So let's focus on a couple of these things as we go along here. Metagaming is the big one, right? Metagaming, the game outside of the game. And I talk a little bit about this in a recent article just this past Sunday. But really, metagaming can really help you, but it can also really hurt you. And really what it depends on is how you actually choose to take in the information from everything that's happening at large and apply it to what you want to do. And I think that we've both had some errors in our thinking there before, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so I've mentioned this a couple times on the Attack Zone. I went to Worlds last year. I went 1-4 and my one was a bye. And, you know, I was coming off of Canadian Nationals and doing well there. And, you know, you and Randy had come off of U.S. Nationals and both performed fairly well there. And, you know, so we kind of thought we had a feel for what we might see. And, you know, I did some play testing with Patrick and ran into something that really shut down my team pretty hard. And I thought, man, okay, now, you know, what the key here is don't care what anyone else is going to do. Just win as fast as you can win. And I had a couple different combos that would maybe go off on, you know, a third or fourth turn and just do an insane amount of damage early. And that would be, okay, that's it. That's how I'm going to win these games. And, you know, that didn't work at all, obviously. I mean, I was playing some of the highest level players at the time. And, you know, I just, if my combo didn't fire, my team completely fell apart. And so, I played the metagame and I thought, okay, the key to this whole thing is just win as fast as you can and don't worry about anybody else. And I fell flat on my face.
I almost went the other direction. I've talked a little bit about my failures there, but I've never gone super in depth. But basically, we were kind of looking at it from a different side, looking at the meta and saying, and trying to build in certain responses to it. And along the way, I think the win condition was never super strong. I think it was there. It was never super strong, and it relied a little too much on what other people were going to do. And so the pitfall there is, if other people aren't doing that thing, or at least not the people that you're playing, you're kind of sunk. So the first thing that I sit down across from is just a pure Gabi sidekick team. And there was not a whole lot other than Constantine that I had that I could do about that, especially when they get crazy amounts of sidekicks out very quickly. The game finished and he like apologized. And it was cool. It was what it was. But there wasn't a lot that I could do about that. So my lesson was, there's a problem with taking decks that are made to exploit other decks, because they're almost always going to be worse than decks that are just good on their own. And that's an important thing there. I mean, because if it's built to do something else, just the nature of Swiss, you might never play that thing. And really, as you go down after that first loss, now you start to play some of the other 0-1s, you have a bigger chance of playing against something else that's weird, that maybe wasn't good enough to win in the first game, and maybe was going to keep losing, but now it's something weird and different that you also weren't built to exploit. And it can just snowball down from there. So I too went 1-4 in the qualifier and spent the rest of the time there enjoying Origins, which was hardly a consolation prize. It was amazing. I almost call it the real prize of the whole thing. But that was certainly a lesson there, was focusing more on a deck that's good by itself, not built to just destroy a different kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There's several lessons to be learned there. But I, you know, kind of to add to that, I think that the next thing that you want to be concerned with is you don't want to look at those the changes in the meta that are small or maybe especially the ones that are maybe hard to quantify, but you really need to look at the ones that are big, the big shifts, like, all right, this isn't going to work anymore. Like, I'm in the current meta versus, you know, 6 months ago, I'm not going to be able to just plan on buying my 6 or 7 cost character and polying them in third turn.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what, right? Like, that doesn't happen with as much reliability anymore. You know, Oracle and Thief and everything else, if you go second, it's just, you know, sorry, it's not going to happen. So
absolutely. Oh, there's no, I mean, Poly Jinzo, there's no point in playing it right now. There's just none. Everything is too fast. And those are the things you have to look at. The problem with metagaming is that it's mostly theoretical, so that even if something sounds really great in your head and is logical, that doesn't necessarily equate to how it actually can play out in the game, where randomness is a factor in the drawing of the dice, in what your opponent can do, in just rolling those dice, et cetera, et cetera. Metagaming doesn't often translate from the theoretical to the practical, in at least not in those small shifts. In the big shifts, absolutely. You look at it and say, nope, no way Polygens is working here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough pill to swallow sometimes too, because you know, we might see something on another team or see something on a live stream, or, you know, somebody's twitching, you know, halfway across the country or in another country, and you see something that really catches your eye, and you might want to find a way to pull it into your team, but without really knowing some of the details around, you know, how the nuance, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. The nuance around how does this fit in with what I'm already doing? Like, we're taking the big metagame idea, and now I'm trying to draw it into a deck building idea. But we can do the reverse too, right? Like, those small minor shifts in your team can create big changes to the way your team plays. Those small changes to the meta can create big changes to the way the meta plays, but they might not. And you've got to be mm-hmm. careful not to put too much influence or give too much influence to those things that are hard to quantify. And that's where, you know, honestly, evaluation becomes a really big key, and knowing how to rightly evaluate something, not just, oh, that worked, that's cool, I need to add that right now.
Oh, this beat that dominant deck in the tournament, so that must be the answer. Well, it turns out that was just when it was on its hot streak and the person that it played against didn't really know what they were doing. They net decked it, but they didn't net learn it, right? Listen to that earlier episode of season 2 of the Attack Zone. And so what information do you actually have there? Nothing reliable at all. And as you say, that's where you have to go to the evaluation. And two, in that net learn episode, we talked about having to understand a team before you make any changes to it, if you're net decking and tweaking and trying to improve. Well, that's where that comes in. You know, you talked about those little changes can make big ripples, but they might not. When you're looking at your team, as we just to kind of touch upon, we talked about some of your own testing above. If you look at your team and you want to make a change, well, really understand why you're making that change, because that can ripple too. And if it's just purely based on these little teeny meta calls that might not actually mean anything, really give it a long look before you pull the trigger on that.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
So then I think what we want to go into, since metagaming can help only on the macro scale, let's talk about some things that actually really do help you. And JT, you talk about this a lot, so I'm going to hand this over to you for the beginning. Playing what you know.
Yeah, this is such a, for me, it's such a huge key. Like, if you go into, you touch on this a little bit in your article, if you go into a tournament and you bring the best team, that's great. That's wonderful. If you think it's what is the best, that's awesome. But if you don't know it, if you don't know it inside and out, if you don't know the pieces and how they fit and what really is, you don't know how to sit it down against your opponent and look across, see what they're going to do, find out who goes first, and then know what you're probably going to go turns 1, 2, and 3, and then know how to play off and how to change that based on what they do, and You know, if you don't know those things, you can fall apart real, real fast. And, you know, so I think about, like, U.S. Nationals and Worlds at Origins. Like, U.S. Nationals, Isaac, Stewart, and I, we all played the same team, right? The same exact team. I think the only thing that was different was maybe dice counts. And Isaac said he struggled playing it a little bit because he felt like he was missing something, right? So he swapped out Prismatic Spray for Constantine. And he said for him, that made all the difference in the world. He felt like, okay, I've got this piece that I know how to use really, really well. It fits his preferred play style of control a little bit better. And it you know, it changed it for him. The team felt more natural. Finding the way, the time to fit Constantine into the purchase curves, like, you know, when to pick him up, and you know, if there's a time to pick up a second, like, that stuff just felt natural to him. And so if there's that safety blanket, right? Like, if there's one of those things that you just know really, really well and can fit in the thing that you're planning on playing, go for it.
You know, I had some similar things when I was testing earlier on when we were getting ready for the PDC States. And I was looking at some of the teams, and including Prismatic Spray, and when I thought I would need to have it versus not. And it never felt quite right to me either. Prismatic Spray just felt very awkward to fit into the buy curve without going out of your way or messing something else up to do it. And I ended up setting aside any of the teams that really were using it to that kind of extent. And really, we ended up taking the same thing to that one, speaking of taking the same team as other people. And, you know, that's... You got to look at it and know that, hey, this might work and this might be a thing, but if it doesn't work for me, I can't bring it. I got to bring something that does work for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I've had conversations with a few folks on the website, right? Like, one of the users emailed me, well, sent me a private message really just 2 weeks ago and said, hey, I'm looking to gear up for a PDC, and I'm wondering, you know, send me your team list. I'm having trouble finding it, and I want to compare it to Guy's list and from Worlds and see. So I sent him my list and the article that Mike wrote up from, you know, Canadian Nationals, and then I just spilled my thoughts on, you know, that team compared to Guy's team, and how, you know, really, like, Puzzle and Taunt kind of perform the same thing, right? Like, you know, Puzzle gets to sit there and you can remove a character at will, but Taunt can do it on your opponent's turn, provided you can play a global for simply the cost of that character's attack and life. So, like, you know, that's going to end up in the used, and so if you know how to play Puzzle, then play Puzzle, but if you know how to use Taunt the same way, then use Taunt. Like, comparison, those two things kind of perform similar functions on those two different teams, but, you know, in many cases it's going to be a comfort level with one versus the other. And I had another conversation with Stormy Knight in Rochester, and this goes back to, I think, maybe in between WKO1 and WKO2, and talking about, like, what to play, because we had a match at the first WKO that was just awesome, like, one of the best matches I've ever played. I don't remember all the details right now. I remember I won, but it, like, I probably only had one life, and he should have had me the turn before and just missed it by, you know, just that much. Like, it was an epic match, and so we started chatting in between and talking about, well, what do you think's gonna go off? What do you think's the right play? And you know, we ended up talking through some stuff, and I said, like, honestly, it's gonna come down to what you know. What do you feel best with? And that second round of WKOs, I took a couple different things because I really wanted to feel them out in a competitive setting, right? So mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily play the things that I felt like I knew the best, but I did it with the purpose of trying to find something out. So that's a little bit different. That kind of falls into your disclaimer at the beginning mm-hmm. of the show. But in the end, like if you're going to gun for the win, right? Like you're going full on Spike. I'm here to win. Then you've got to play the thing you know the best.
Yeah, you know, I think of 2015 Nats, the first qualifier versus the second qualifier. The first qualifier, I took something that was I thought had potential, but was a little less familiar to me. And it involved a combo with the Iceman making some bolts and doing some crazy pumping up and stuff. And I found that in game, it was actually a little harder to get to fire than it seemed to be in my testing. I ended up kind of rallying and finishing 3-2, but that was after an 0-2 start and it wasn't enough to make the cut. And so I switched gears completely. I went to the High Hopes team that Randy and I had been working on the last several weeks, which I obviously knew much, much better. And you know, of course, ended up qualifying for the next day and then took that in the next day as well and did very well. And it proves the same point. You know, looking at this thing might be good and it might be this really cool idea that you had, but if your objective is to win, it's really hard to do that if you go into an environment where other people, you know, also have that same objective to win. And you're going to have a harder time seeing the counter strategies and what's correct to do based on what your opponent has when it's a less familiar team to you.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that makes this the best choice for me every time, is that I don't know what I'm going to face. And so if I can know what I bring better than anyone else knows what they bring, then I'll at least have that much advantage. And so then when I sit down and I see something across that I recognize, great, I'm good to go. If I see something that I don't recognize, I can work my way through that because I at least know what I've got on the table really, mm-hmm. really well.
And really, I think that some of the deck building guidelines that I've kind of come up with, and to an extent, they've taken a little bit of a life of their own, and they're not meant to be the be all end all, but it's a good starting point for people who are having trouble. It's the age old, the couple cards that are the win condition, couple cards that are consistency, that would be like ramp and things like that. And then a few cards that protect that win condition from threats. That kind of comes back to, again, playing your deck based on your deck and not based on everybody else. You can't predict everybody else. You're going to be better with the stuff that you know and that you can control a little bit more. Make your deck based on those elements versus the everybody else elements that you can't really piece together. Because then you end up putting something on your team that's actually, you know, not really well suited for how you want to play the game.
Yeah, I couldn't have said any better.
So you wanted to talk a little bit about stepping back to the big picture on this, right?
Yeah, I alluded to this a little bit earlier. Like we talk about playing, you know, the thing that you know the best, and this is a strategy for what team to take. Right, and there's all sorts of ways to come up with that. Well, I've had success with it. I've seen someone else run it. I learned it. I've done these things. I've prepared. I've played it. I've thrown it against everything I can think of. Right, but if you step back, and I would, I mean, it's your time. It's your preparation. But I would only use the strategies that you know really have an impact for your ability to make that determination, right? And so whether that's visualization, or you know, you're evaluating some cards using quadrant theory, or you know, you're play testing a certain way, or you know, you're evaluating a certain way, like we've listed a bunch of ideas throughout this season of the podcast and the previous season too about what to do and how to come up with these things and all these strategies. But the reality is, like, do what works best for you, right? So, you know, it's easy for me to pitch ideas to my buddy Jay when he's asking about, you know, what do I do for this draft coming up? And I say, well, X, Y, and Z. And he's like, well, that didn't help me win my draft. And I was like, well, I don't know what to tell you, Jay. That's the strategy I use. We need to come up and figure out what works for you. And so it's one thing to boil down and say, let's just take the best team, the team that I know the best. It's another thing to step back and say, really, just use the strategies that work best for you overall. And if you start with that, then by the time you get to the point where you're actually, you know, narrowing down your team, like, you've done everything in a far more efficient manner, and it really probably sets you up for being able to make even better decisions.
Yeah, and, you know, making maybe a mistake in following advice in a certain way, like you just talked about, that's not a failing of the advisor, in this case you, or the advisee, in this case Jay. That's not a failing on either side. That's just, one, Jay's learned, okay, this strategy doesn't work for me. Two, it also means that, like you said, let's find the thing that is right. It's all a progression and it's all a journey. So take the time. There's going to be some stumbling blocks along the way. I think that we're proof of that. There's going to be stumbling blocks along the way. There's going to be learning opportunities. There's going to be success and then failure and then success again and then some more failure. But as long as you're learning along the way and making those stretch mistakes where you learn the most and not the sloppy mistakes where you learn the least, then you're going to improve. And that's really what we're all about.
Yeah, I think this is where evaluation can be so important, and it's so, like, I so often overlook it. So I know others probably do too. It's good to do a hot wash, like an immediate breakdown after a playtesting session and chat things through. It's also really, really good to do, you know, more of a cold wash, like let it sit for a day or two, and then come back to it and work it out again and talk through it again and make sure that, you know, what your initial reaction and thoughts are about how things went and what you learned, make sure that sticks, right? Like, this is – that works for a game like this, but also works for – I mentioned this before, but it works for – bigger decisions, like whether or not to take a job offer or whether or not to, like, you've got to validate those thoughts and make sure that they're not just an emotional response, emotional reaction to that external stimuli. Like, that evaluation is so key.
Heck, if we want to talk about life decisions, there is a job offer that I took probably, geez, oh, a few years ago. There was I was going to be transitioning to a different role where I was currently working. Didn't love it, but I was interested in it. But I was interviewing around, and I found a place that was a similar role, better pay, more responsibility, you know, just better. Seemed great. And just rose-colored glasses, jumped, went there. It was horrible. Horrible. And I ended up getting out of there as quickly as I possibly could. And going back, if I could change one thing, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily change this because I'm not displeased with how things have turned out since then at all. But if I could change one thing, that would be the point that I would think about changing, was taking that different job. So really, like you said, let the cold wash go. But at the same time, I would say don't be too quick to dismiss things. One thing that I see a lot in conversations about teams, I see this, you know, sometimes we get this way, I've seen it with others as well, is that idea of, oh, that thing can't be good, you know, or just like listing, oh, well, this is countered by this and this and this and this. Okay, everything's countered by something. So don't dismiss an idea outright without actually knowing the nuts and bolts behind it, because you could actually be dismissing something that's really, really interesting. or you could just be misunderstanding how something works right out of hand. You know, well, why is this deck successful? Don't you know that this is a counter to it? Well, yeah, that might be a counter to it, except nobody can possibly do this that way, or nobody will, because that will lose to this other thing every single time. People dismiss things out of hand because they theorycraft in their head, or they let that little bit of theoretical metagaming go, and they miss really important details. And that's an important thing as well to point out within this topic.
I do that all the time. I wish Randy was here, because, oh my gosh, I do this to him all the time. Like, I am the king of, like, nope, that sucks. That's no way. And then the next thing I know, like, Isaac or Stuart is bringing it to the table, and we're like, oh man, that's actually pretty good. And Randy gets so frustrated.
I learned a long time ago not to doubt Randy's deck building.
I do this all the time. I'm so bad at it. Maybe it's because I just trust what I know, and like, if it's combo or, you know, some sort of shenanigans that I'm not comfortable with, I'm like, no, we're not. I'm not touching that. No way. Like, I did this all along with Mask Ring, and then, you know, lo and behold, like, it has a real strong showing. Not only did it perform well at the WKOs, but then also, you know, Nationals and Worlds, like, it was all over. And I poo-pooed it. I still poo-poo it. Like, I tell Randy, I'm not going to learn that garbage. I don't know it. I can't play it. I'm not going to learn it. So I dismiss it out of hand because, you know, cause I look at them like, why bring distraction? You know, someone's going to have Doom Caliber Knight. Well, yeah, but maybe someone will, but let's at least force them to use that global, right? Like, force them, you know, and if they don't have it, great. Then I'm at the advantage. So, it's so easy to just dismiss things and write them off and move on. It's real important to have a second look and make sure that the determination you've made actually fits and is valid, right?
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that doesn't mean that you just take this strategy and you run with it and make it your own, but it does mean that you at least give it some respect, because you don't know what you're going to see, and it might turn out that it's not so easily countered. It's tough to know. But, yeah, evaluation is so important, not just of teams themselves or of individual cards, but of your own play and what fits for you and what approach is going to work for you. So maybe that's... That's certainly not a definite answer to what deck do I bring to a tournament, but there can't be, because this is actually a more personal question than I think some people are going to be willing to admit. Some people are going to say, oh yeah, this is the thing that's winning, so just bring that. But maybe there's something else that's winning too, maybe not as hard as the other thing. Maybe there's something else that's winning too, and that fits you better, and that's the deck for you. You know, the point that we make here, and in my recent article, the best deck doesn't mean the best deck in the game. It's what you see as the best deck. And that's going to be different things for different people. There's a lot of things that are viable. It's about which one is viable for you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Before we sign off for this episode, I do want to... just impart a little bit of a message here. Was exchanging some PMs with somebody on the website, and one thing they said was, hey, by the way, I love the podcast, the articles, but sometimes it seems like you only scratch the surface. Maybe I'm the only one that thinks that, but when I read an article or listen to a podcast, it gives me more questions, and I don't always know where to get the answers. Well, for one, please message us, comment on the articles, PM, whatever like that. That's cool. That's the biggest one, in fact. I said for one, I don't even have a necessarily a 4-2. Message us, comment, whichever one you want. If you want it in public, cool. If you want it in private, that's cool too. Because there are plenty of times that I can think of off the top of my head where a comment on an article with somebody having a question or a PM that I got has inspired a completely different article focusing on that topic or an episode of one of our podcasts also focusing on that topic. So if there's a question that you have or a deeper delve into a certain concept or topic that we're talking about, please send us that message. We want to hear from you because that's the only way we're going to be able to give you the stuff that that you want that's going to help you. And, you know, there's not enough time to go into every single element of something, every single podcast. So if there's something you feel is missing, let us know and maybe we'll just answer it with you or maybe it'll inspire something greater. It's certainly happened before.
Yep. Comment, like, if you're comfortable with it in public, just comment, because there's so many people on the website right now who are so good and have such a high level understanding of this game. Comment, or you know, if you don't want it public, go ahead and send the private message and let us kind of kick around and you know, email back and forth or PM back and forth. I know I'll speak for the three of us who are routinely on the attack zone, both Randy, myself, and Dave as well. We are glad to do that. We love those types of interactions. So definitely shoot that message, whether it's a comment or a PM.
Yeah, absolutely. I can think of so many different occasions when that's happened, just with the Level Up series that I've been writing. But for example, I remember I did one about the pivot, the point where you stop buying stuff and start focusing on executing your win condition. And somebody said, somebody made a comment and it inspired something more to go into. Like somebody said, hey, you know, I know I've lost games by not understanding like what this point is. So then we dug in deeper on, like determining whether or not you buy something. So there's so many times when that's happened. Let's talk, let's do it. We are so interactive on all the stuff that we do. I know that I try to reply to comments frequently in articles. I try to make sure that I'm there watching and interacting. So don't leave a question unasked. It might help somebody. Don't feel like it's a dumb question. It might help somebody. It might help us come up with a better topic to bring to you. So, all right. I think that does it for this one. Thank you so much for listening. We, of course, know that you can spend your time in many different ways, and we're truly thankful that you choose to spend it with us. If you like what we're doing, please leave a review on iTunes or some other service. It helps us get the word out. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network. Production assistance from RJ Retro. Theme music courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com. Promotional consideration given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcast, The Reserve Pool, every Thursday. We'll be back in 2 weeks. And until then, keep rolling.
Cheers.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, it was fun. Nice, neat, compact, exactly what it needed to be.
I think we're going to be happy with it.
Oh, yeah, I'm already happy with it. It's just going to need lining up. It shouldn't need any editing at all.
There's one spot where I kind of rambled on where we were talking, don't focus on the minor, hard to quantify things.
Oh, it wasn't bad, though. It was good stuff.
Well, it was kind of garbage.
Well, I mean, 99% of what you say is garbage. We just dress it up. We just dress it up through editing.
That's true.
Like,
that's
true. Most people on this site interact with you through, like, they hear this podcast and they read what you write. They don't know the edit passes that we do on every word that you say.
That's fair.
In fact, guys, it's time to tell you, JT isn't even an actual person. We just programmed him up for all of you.
I'm actually Latverian pretending to be American. Hey, so, have you seen any good movies recently?
I saw Star Trek Beyond, and I loved it.
Oh my gosh, it was so good.
Oh, really? It was.
It was so stinking good.
Yes.
Oh,
so you liked it?
Oh, no, I loved it.
Me too. It was fantastic. It was exactly what I wanted. And, you know, I'm not a person, I'm a long time Trekkie. Long time. I mean, like, since probably age 3, I remember watching Star Trek original series reruns with my dad. And then, of course, Next Gen came out, and it was fantastic. I have never been a Trekkie who's had a problem with Into Darkness or the 2009 one. I was fine with those, had no issue with the JJ movies, no problems at all. This one was markedly better than those, but I didn't hate the previous ones either.
I love them. Here's the thing. I love to be entertained, and so I don't generally go to movies with crazy high expectations. So if I don't like a movie, like, you seriously did something wrong, because I just love to be entertained, and I'll just suspend all disbelief, and I will, like, completely fail to catch most plot holes in most movies. That said, I don't like Whiplash in Iron Man 2. And that's pretty much the only criticism I have for all three of the Iron Man movies.
So, real talk, I have not seen any of the Iron Man movies.
We're no longer friends. Just until you see them, and then we'll be friends again. But there's plenty to criticize. There's plenty to criticize. There's plenty to criticize. And yet, I'm just massively entertained by them. I don't care. It doesn't matter the things that they ruined or the characters that they broke. I'm just entertained. I love it.
Are you not entertained?
Yep.